Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host this evening, Gary Cocker, and I am joined by a man who loves a team in green. It's Tony.
Hello, Gary.
Hello, Tony. And I'm joined by the man who's the King of Kirkcaldy, Sean McGuigan.
Hello there.
See what I did there? Green King. It's subliminal. It gets in people's heads. The people just love it too much.
Very good.
Anyway, thank you. Hopefully that will not be the last of my seamless segues tonight. Because I'll be honest with you folks, this is a little bit of a clam jamfery of a show, as the big league is no longer in operation thanks to the World Cup. We have had to scrabble around a little bit to pull together something, but we think that much like Shane Ritchie on Ready, Steady, Cook in the mid-90s, we've got enough that we can pull together a lovely little meal. So we're going to start tonight by looking at the weekend's
Shane
action.
Shane Ritchie, he didn't have to prepare meals in Ready, Steady, Cook.
Did you not see that episode? I think he went to a service station.
Now we're talking about specific episodes of mid-90s. Carry on.
Well, basically, as you know, a celebrity has to go to the shops and they come in with a bag of whatever and the chef goes, right, okay, I'm going to make this into whatever I'm going to make it into. And Shane Ritchie, I think, went to a service station at about 4 o'clock in the morning and he came in with, like, rich tea biscuits, tea bags, an apple... a loaf of bread and some other bits and bobs, and whoever
sounds
the chef
like he wasn't
was,
taking it seriously.
He was not taking it seriously. It was a terrific episode. I'm sure you can still find it on YouTube if you like. I don't think you're going to find this episode of the podcast on YouTube, but you never know.
No, but the thing about Ready, Steady, Cook was they would supply the chef with whatever it was, four or five ingredients, but then he or she would prepare a dish that contained about 28 ingredients. It was all a bit of a con.
I think Shane Ritchie maybe knew that when he came into it.
He was on to them.
Yeah. He was ahead of his career.
What a career Shane Ritchie's had. He was also, he was doing EastEnders. Remember he did a pop star? He covered Wham, I'm Your Man.
Did they not do that for comic relief?
Yeah.
For children in need.
And when I was in sixth year, I performed that in the high school talent show. Not the Wham version. The Shane Ritchie version of that song.
Why did you specifically pick the Shane Ritchie version?
To game the system, I think. Get more points that way.
That's what I've done. I've done the talent shows every year, so by the end of that, I finished second, but it was almost like I was given a Lifetime Achievement Award.
So how many people were in it?
There was loads. You had to qualify. I think I qualified through doing When You Say Nothing At All by Ronan Keating.
There was more strings to your bow.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I won it. The first time they ever done it, I won it with Tom Jones' Sex Bomb, but in the qualifiers. I'd done Mama Told Me Not To Come, so kept the Tom Jones theme, but I changed the songs and went more sexual. And in the final. That was when I was in second year. And then the year after that, I got booed off stage because like people had got a bit sick of me. But that's and me and Fowler once done Justin Timberlake and Nelly. And Fowler had a plaster on his face, and I'm not work it. This is all completely true. And we that was sort of like me coming back. That was my comeback.
Right.
So it was a long time in school.
Like Elvis.
Are there pictures, Tony?
I'm sure there will be. I'll speak to Fowler. I'll speak to people that went to high school with. Chris won the last year because that was when he actually started playing guitar and finally someone with actual talent went on the stage and done
it's
something.
It's not what it was there for.
No, it definitely wasn't, but there you go. Nonetheless, that was it.
I like the fact that you said that in second year you made it very sexual.
No, that was the final. I made it sexier in the final by going for Sex Bomb.
So why were you booed in third year? Were you not sexy enough?
No, sexual enough? I think people just got sick of me and my attitude, possibly. Over the course, and people, they like it's just common culture here. They build you up, Sean, and then they just want to knock you down. And
that, tall poppy syndrome.
That's what happened to me at high school. So,
you know exactly what somebody like people like Gaza went through. It's like building. Tony and Gaza just getting built up and then knocked off their pedestal for no reason whatsoever. It's ridiculous.
I felt so sorry for Beckham when he got sent off in the World Cup for kicking. It was absolutely brutal. That could be a whole podcast in itself, my singing career at high school.
That's competitions for you, Tony. And, I mean, there was another big competition this weekend, maybe not quite as big as the Auggies talent show in the early to mid-2000s, but it was the Scottish Cup third round, and there were a couple of... surprises, I suppose you could say, Sean. Would you bash him with surprises?
Oh, aye, totally. Totally. I thought there was some really big surprises. I sat here and confidently predicted last week that there would probably be no surprises at the Scottish Cup. I was struggling to see where the shock would come from. I thought if there was going to be one, it would be at Coatbridge. I thought Stirling Uni had a chance against Albion Rovers. I did not fancy Drumchapel to beat Edinburgh at all. I didn't think that Darvel had much hope against Montrose. And yeah, I mean, especially the Drumchapel result. I haven't seen Craig Anderson mention it, and until somebody like Craig Anderson confirms it, I'm always wary of believing it. But I believe in terms of, I saw it on Twitter that in terms of league placings. It's kind of like technically the biggest ever Scottish Cup shock in terms of placings, because you've got Edinburgh who are doing pretty well in League One, and then Drumchapel are in the second tier of the West of Scotland League, I believe.
Top tier of the West of Scotland.
In fairness, they're doing pretty well. I think if they win their games in hand, they'll be there or thereabouts for being for challenging for promotion. And from what I read, they have a squad that is particularly good for that level, and they will be one of the favourites to get promoted this season. But see, just in terms of especially the Albion Rovers Stirling Uni game and the Drumchapel Edinburgh game, it's the celebrations at full time. I actually had to go scrabbling around for the Drumchapel celebrations. But you know how it's not just the World Cup where you see the bench sprinting onto the park. And it's very much just the World Cup where you see substitutes running on to celebrate a goal. I get that. But in both those games, just everybody, the full bench, the squad, the management team, they're sprinting on the park, and you can see how much it means to everybody involved at the club. To even get to that round for them is an achievement. To get even further and to put out a club that's far higher in the pyramid than they are, you can see what it means to them. And I love the Drumchapel game in particular. The fact that they played at Mary Hill, which is I don't know how to describe it in terms of how it looks. It is an unusual stadium, and it, like one of the stands behind the goals, I presume that there is graffiti on the building behind the stadium, but I could be wrong. It might actually be that the wall is inside the stadium, but every single side of the stadium is completely different. Like, the pitch was an absolute bog. Drumchapel were excellent, incidentally. Edinburgh put them under pressure late on. But at full time, with the Drumchapel players celebrating, the full squad's on the park, and then somebody's letting off fireworks right next to the stadium. It's just, it's absolutely brilliant. And from a, although I thought the draw had been interesting, I didn't anticipate, listen, you thought maybe one or two surprises would come out, but to have three pretty big shocks, I thought it was an excellent round, to be honest.
And Drumchapel have maybe not, they've maybe not got the reward that they were hoping for.
No. I
so politely.
Listen, I by no stretch of the imagination am I taking it for granted that Raith Rovers will get through against Linlithgow Rose. I remember going there in, what year was it? 2013, 2014. Linlithgow should have won. They were better than us on the day. David McGurn had an excellent game, and Raith won it late on with a couple of goals. However, if we can get through against Linlithgow, I want us to play the winners of Drumchapel versus Elgin in the next round. And I've already set my sights on Raith somehow getting to the semi-finals without playing a full-time team. I don't think that's too much to ask for.
And it could happen. Could be done. Just look at the World Cup bracket. Everything's fallen to pieces these days.
So Sean has a, I'm picturing you with a Scottish Cup wall chart by the sun on you. On your wall.
The last time I had a Scottish tournament wall chart with brackets was last season's Challenge Cup, when I was just plotting Raith Rovers' progress to the final, which obviously happened, and we did win it.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is an aside, but do you remember, I can't remember which magazine it was, but it was a magazine where you got each football team's name and you could move them up and down a ladder.
Those were league ladders, Gary, and yep, they were available with both Shoot magazine and Match magazine, and you better believe I had them on my wall.
Yeah. There is actually, there's a pub in Dundee, Frew's, which has a match ball for each team in the top tier, and they have them arranged above the bar in order of where they are in the league at that moment.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
It's like a sort of like a grown-ups version of the league ladder.
Maybe Dundee can have a football in there soon.
They do. It's just dusty. It keeps going in and out of the back room repeatedly. Since you mentioned my specialist subject, Dundee, Dundee, I think we're slightly fortunate to get through against Airdrie. I think that was the potentially most embarrassing result that could have come out of it. It being 2-2 at full time, Dundee benefiting from Airdrie going down to 10 men. Dundee also managing to break Craig Anderson's spreadsheets, because Dundee had 7 substitutes in a game, I think for the first time in Scottish Cup history, as a result of 5 subs in normal time, a sub in extra time, and Ian Lawler managed to crack his head against a post in a scramble to stop us going 3-2 down at one point. So that was a slight relief for me. And it's quite nice to see in the next round that it's exactly, I think, what I was hoping for, which was not a tie that I would be absolutely embarrassed if we went out, but also a tie that I have some vague hope with, a way to St Mirren. You know, it's not a way to think.
The perfect type of tie where we won't lose embarrassingly and we might not win. Surely you just want to, I look for ties that we want to win. That's my number one thing.
Yeah, but Tony, I have gone through many, many years of watching Dundee in the Scottish Cup. None more terrifying than that game against Bonnyrigg a few years back.
Oh, yeah.
Genuine, that was awful. I was hiding behind my sofa for that one. So, yes, we've got an away tie to St Mirren, which is fairly doable. Of course, your team, Tony, has the probably the pick of the fourth round, which is the very first side that was drawn out of the hat. Hearts versus Hibs. How are you feeling about another Edinburgh derby?
Fucking shite. It was like... No, but just that I was looking at the third round that they're drawing. I was like, wow, there's so many like cool teams that I would normally get to maybe go and see a game. And then I was looking at like the teams that went through. I'm like, oh, we could get something really... Really could be fun to go and... I mean, there's teams that I'd never even heard of before. Hill of Beath Hawthorn. I know they went out, but it was like, right, this is what we're talking about. Fun trip. I could be going to Linlithgow. I could be going to... I mean, former team were playing Stenhouse Muir. I was getting excited about that one. That's a really long one. Drumchapel. I mean, we got Aberdeen have managed to get Darvel. You know what I mean? These are like once-in-a-lifetime sort of games and trips, and then you just get fucking Hearts in the cup again, which happens all the time. And then not just that, it's like not in a good time for Hibs to be getting Hearts. I mean, for if you're Lee Johnson, you must be really panicking, because it's going to be hard enough for him to get through the block of next four games. But if he's somehow able to get a result maybe against Livingston and then something at Tynecastle, there's still a sacking in the post. Because there's a game at the end of the month that could piss everyone off at Easter Road there. So it's just... Before, I think, getting the derbies, I mean, I think it was for 100 years, there was 10, maybe, so that we only played like once or twice in 100 years in the Scottish Cup, and now we've played like 10 times in the last 12 years or something like that. So it sort of loses its magic when that happened. Like I said, I was really excited about maybe some sort of fun trip that I could go on, but instead I've just greased the road and watch the worst derby in the world and one that we normally lose.
You'll never say that if again. You win, Tony. You'll never say that if you win.
I will never say that. And obviously I'll go. I got my ticket for Tynecastle the other day as well, despite the fact that everything that could possibly go wrong at Hibs is kind of happening now, including our main forward becoming a vibesman for Australia and then won't be coming back to play. But what can you do? What can you do? But it could be more fun, in my opinion.
I did like the fact that, referring back to the Dundee Airdrie game, that Cammy Ballantyne got his, I think it's his fifth red card in a season and a half.
I mean, that's impressive.
And I think if you go back a bit further, he's had like seven in about 2 years. I mean, bearing in mind, he's always been regarded as one of the best kind of part-time fullbacks, and never really been known for his, unless it's very much went under the radar. So to suddenly be somebody who turns
the
dirtiest
player in the country
and becomes a dirty liability, it's very, very funny. And to be fair, we've not even mentioned the highlight of the Scottish Cup. For me, certainly, perhaps not yourselves, but for me, the highlight of the Scottish Cup, it was nothing to do with chalks, it was nothing to do with the draw. It was the guys on the Falkirk Daft podcast. When they were asked, they must have recorded a podcast before the fourth round draw, and they were talking about who they wanted in the next round, and one of them said that they wanted Stenhouse Muir, and the reason that they wanted Stenny in the next round was because, and I quote, that wee prick Craig Telfer from A View to the Terrace, because they're totally fed up of him. And I just think to myself, imagine being so rattled by four absolute bojos on a Friday night that's what you have.
That's what you're thinking about for your Scottish Cup run, is that you have to go to a shit place like Stenhouse Muir because you're so desperate to get up Telfer.
And of course, them saying that will definitely make Telfer calm down about his about his Falkirk scenarios.
He's got them exactly where he wants them. Just before we move on from the Scottish Cup, I think the one other result we should probably pick up on is this the shock of the round, Darvel beating Montrose 5-2 at home? I know that obviously Montrose had a pretty shit result the week before that at Queen of the South, but generally speaking, they're still in and about the playoff spots in League One. Darvel, for all of the investment, are still Darvel going to Lynx Park. You wouldn't expect them to be. I think that at one point they were 4-1 down.
I was wanting to
after half time. What
I wanted to sort of like ask Sean. I don't know the context for a lot of this. So like for Montrose and for Edinburgh, are we talking like these being like some of the worst results of their entire history?
For Edinburgh, since they came into the SPFL this is the worst result by a mile.
Well, yeah.
Well, say I left it up my head. I've not even looked into it. In terms of Montrose, I was reading actually they have a particularly poor Scottish Cup record in recent years, which again, I hadn't really noticed, or if I had noticed, I'd kind of forgotten all about it. But certainly in terms of how dismissive their defeat was to Darvel at the weekend. I mean, Montrose missed chances, don't get me wrong, but Darvel missed a couple as well. And I know Darvel have a squad that is reasonably good. So you look at that midfield, like Ian McShane's in there, 29, like a decent player. Thomas Riley's still there, 28, again, a player that could be at a higher level. And Stirling has been a kind of lower league stalwart in recent years, still only 32. He scored. Ross, now who was at Hibs? His name is it Ross Caldwell that was on Hibs books for a while. And then was it Aloha and then kind of dribbled down the leagues.
Scored a winner at Tynecastle.
Yeah, Ross Meakin was there as well. So yes, Darvel have a decent squad. There's no two ways about it. Montrose were weakened by the fact that some of the lone players weren't able to play. And again, if you're a lower league club who is kind of reliant on loan signings each season, as Montrose kind of tend to be, then that weakens them when it comes to the cup competitions if they're not allowed to play. And I think their biggest concern is the fact that Sean Dillon didn't play on Saturday. And even though he's 39, and even though this must be either his last season or his second last season, who knows, but they still seem to go to pieces when Dillon isn't there, and that very much seemed to be the case. The weekend, their defending was dreadful, and that ultimately cost them. So I didn't see that result coming, and even with the kind of comparable squads, I still thought Montrose would have had enough, but wasn't to be. And certainly on the day, Darvel merited their place in the next round. Don't think it's Montrose's worst result, to be honest, but it was a bad one, no doubt about it.
Looking through some of the other ties, I think James McFadden said that when asked about Motherwell's tie against Arbroath, he said, well, that's, you know, Gayfield's always a difficult place to go. You know, that'll be a really tough game for Motherwell. Arbroath have got the grand total of 6 points from 8 games at home this season to Championship teams. So, admittedly, it will be January weather, but I'm pretty sure Motherwell should be okay there.
An absolutely honking Hibs team went there last season when they barely won a game the whole season and won comfortably. And that was when Arbroath were flying and trying to get promoted. So Arbroath are a shit club compared to Motherwell. No offence. It was a great day. One of the most enjoyable away fan experiences I've ever had. But in terms of ability against these sides, no, they're not. They're going to really struggle.
I think a tie that will be really interesting will be Partick Thistle playing Dunfermline. Obviously Dunfermline flying high at the moment. James McPake is on his second manager of a specified time period award, because they combine September and October.
Right.
But obviously, yeah, Dunfermline are beginning to make great guns. Thistle are both on and off the pitch, not looking terrific just now. So that's maybe one that some of your fellow Fifers will be excited by, Sean, but I'm guessing that you're hope/expectation will be that Thistle will overcome McPake's men.
I hope Partick Thistle fucking gub them.
That's the sort of partisan comment I was looking for, thank you. And I think the other notable tie, if only for the pre-match story and Greenock Morton managing to punt some merchandise off the back of it, is Celtic playing Greenock Morton and Duguemery posing with a t-shirt with his winning penalty.
Nothing he can't do, Duguemery.
No.
Manager. The front of the t-shirts, brilliant stuff.
Yeah. And of course, another tie that is taking place in the fourth round will be St Johnstone playing Mr Beale's Rangers side. Since I think we last joined you, Rangers have disposed of the services of Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, and like all too many people across this country, they've gone back to what they thought served them well before, and they have brought back CVG's assistant. Is it fair to say that reaction to this news has been mixed?
Absolutely, but you'll have everyone on side now because apparently the players are going to wear suits to the games.
Oh, so, don't get me started on that.
I mean, I don't know if that's him I'm always wary about stuff like this because he makes a decision at the club. It's not that he's trying to flaunt it to the media and then someone goes to the media and it makes it all look a bit like, it makes everyone look a bit silly because he's putting major importance on that and that he's trying to get the fans on side almost. That's how that feels. But I don't want to make that call because I don't know if that's actually true. Anyone could have sort of leaked that out. That's nothing to do with Beale, but, it's nearly impossible to really figure out how Beale's going to do. It's a bit of a left field appointment, even though it was always mooted from basically the word go.
It's the least surprising appointment.
Because
although he has there's a kind of small sample size of how good a manager Michael Beale is, but he's been linked to it since before Van Bronckhorst was huckled out the door.
He was at one of the games, wasn't he, watching?
That was a strange thing. I'm kind of flip-flopping between whether I think he'll be good or whether I think he'll be poor. I went on a QPR forum earlier, and they seemed pretty sorry to see him go. They were very upset at how he left in terms of... He said something after the Wolves.
The loyalty and everyone's with me. Yeah. How can I? I've asked everyone to go with me. So how can I be the first to jump ship or something like that? Yeah. So
he was actually speaking in code. I am very loyal, and just nobody picked up on it. It's their own fault, really.
But the interesting thing was QPR fans were dismissive of him because of that, but they all seemed reasonably sorry to see him go. Like they seemed like pretty annoyed, and even though he hadn't been there a long period of time, the suggestion seemed to be that there was signs of recovery in terms of his tenure in charge. And I think what he has to his advantage, and although I'm not sure how big a success he'll be, I think there's fairly basic things that a half decent manager could turn around at Rangers, and there seems to be. For what I gather, an issue in terms of fitness, an issue in terms of how thorough their training is and how thorough the players feel their fitness levels are. I think you look at things that have went on under Bronckhorst's tenure. They start games poorly. They tend to concede the first goal. Because of that, he then has made a huge amount of substitutions at half-time, which I don't think... goes down particularly well with players. I don't think he necessarily got good buy-in from the squad because of that, and maybe because of his people skills. I don't know as well. I thought he came across okay, but maybe that wasn't the case behind the scenes. So I think if Beale has something about him, but I think if Beale has something about him, then he can go in there and make reasonably decent strides, which will make a difference. And although 9 points, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't expect Rangers to be able to win the league this season, but it doesn't mean that they can't. Did you remember when, towards the midpoint of Gerrard's tenure, and suddenly they got a couple of wins against Celtic in consecutive games, mm-hmm. I think, and suddenly that kind of normalised, so Rangers beating Celtic was now starting to become the norm, and it laid down a bit of a marker. And even if Beale can't win the league this season, and I presume that'll be the case, but who knows, even if just getting a couple of wins against Celtic lays down a marker for going into the next season, and as much as I'm not sure about him, I still think he can make a positive impact this term, because this team, it feels like there's kind of easy wins, I suppose, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I agree, Sean. I think that the main thing that'll be what we find out about Beale is in the summer. I think he's got an open goal here coming back, simply because a lot of these players were unhappy. But that's what we're going to take from under Van Bronckhorst, and he's a hugely popular figure with a large amount of these players. These are players that he was involved in bringing in the club, he coached and won a league together. They will have they'll have a pretty strong bond together. So I'm not worried about this period from a Rangers perspective. I think they will easily improve. The fans will get on board because obviously he's got huge credit in the bank for what he achieved previously. So I think they'll have a big uplift, and he wants to play sort of quite bombastic football, going by what he's saying, and that's all going to work. The difference is we've never really seen him as a manager have to build a team. I know he'd done it along with Gerrard, but with him by himself. So that's where they're going to need a huge rebuild in the summer, Rangers. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he does that in terms of other things that go his way. In that circumstance, it might just be consequential, but Gerrard's career's nosedived without him. So that lends itself to the idea that Gerrard needed him, and he was maybe the brains behind the operation. And even though he did have a little downturn at QPR, I don't think they spent a huge amount of money. I think he was stuck with quite a weak squad by what a lot of people's ideas down there, from their perspective. It was, and he was getting a tune out of them because of how good his coaching skills are. So I think, as I said, it's very easy, and we've seen it when Gary says mixed. We've seen everyone, there's easy, it's low-hanging fruit for both sides to come up with reasons why it'll either work or it won't work. So I think it'll be quite an interesting appointment to see how that goes, even if it's just seeing people who in the media look stupid again.
I think one of the reasons it's mixed is just because of the sheer number of Rangers supporters, you're going to get some absolutely barking mad suggestions. So I think my favourite one was, I think somebody on Follow suggested that the club should try to persuade Bobby Firmino to hang up the boots and come up north and manage Rangers. No idea if Roberto Firmino wants to do that, if he even wanted to do it, whether he wants to do it
currently
for
playing
Rangers.
For Liverpool.
Yeah.
Currently.
Yeah. I think the argument was,
I think he's our top goal scorer this season.
Yeah. I think the argument was, oh, well, he didn't make the Brazil squad.
Oh, yeah. So he tried to just flush away my entire career. I'm coming to manage Rangers. Absolutely insane stuff. It's absolutely insane. It's interesting as well that if I'm a Rangers fan, you ever look and think, right, the QPR, they've lost the manager. He's done the dirty on them. Have they been pissing on strips and setting fires to Michael Beale sort of cardboard cutouts? Even though he's all the things he said. Unique fan base. It's a unique fan base.
Yeah. And I mean, looking through the QPR squad, he wasn't manager long enough that you would imagine there would be anybody he would tempt up. But there's quite a few names in there that Scottish football fans will recognise. Obviously, Lyndon Dykes is at QPR at the moment.
He's apparently a really big fan of Lyndon Dykes, is what Craig Anderson told me, and I just, whatever Craig Anderson tells me, I just take it as apt. I don't check anything.
I was going to say it's the safest thing to do, but it's also the most dangerous thing to do. He could really lead us all down the garden path. But, I mean, obviously a lot of this is qualified on the back of, you know, QPR could still legitimately end up promoted to the Premier League. And I don't think anyone, if Bobby Firmino isn't leaving the Premier League to go and manage Rangers, you're probably not going to get any of these guys. But you've got Jordan Archer. One day he will be
Wait a minute, does Jordan Archer play and go for QPR?
No, he doesn't. He is kept on the bench by, and you're going to love this, Sean. You may or may not remember, when Jim McIntyre was Dundee manager, he brought in Senny Dieng on loan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As keeper, he's QPR's number one, and he's also in the Senegal squad.
Right, now I understand how QPR aren't in the playoff positions.
Yes.
Well, I mean, this guy's had an upturn in his career. He's playing he's at the World Cup, and he's a number one in that team vying for the playoffs and the championship.
Yep. And Leon Balogun is at QPR as well.
And this previously, I saw Rangers. Today that could people are worried about him going back.
Well, Rangers.
Rangers. I don't know. Like their central defence has been such an issue right now that it looks at Leon Balogun as an absolutely huge miss. Because Leon Balogun was good for Rangers overall.
I've heard he's not leaving unless Jordan 34. Henderson goes to Rangers to become assistant manager.
Incidentally, Lyndon Dykes would be a terrible signing for Rangers.
It would never work. It's just like, I mean, a team that plays on the front foot, who create loads of chances, who don't need his bulldog approach. So all his sort of plus points are just not needed at a Rangers team in the Scottish Premiership. And then all his weaknesses would get shown up massively. So fingers, it's one of those, I don't want it because I like him for Scotland. I like the way he plays. He's perfect as a sort of backup striker, impact player. But It's also funny if he goes to Rangers and he's just rubbish.
It's basically a kind of giant, baldy, scrappy dude, and that's not what like that's not what Rangers need.
Yeah,
but, and also it'd be expensive as well. So I can't imagine he'll rock up at Ibrox. Funny if he did.
One player who would be significantly less expensive would be Ryan Porteous. And I'm sorry to bring this up, Tony, and I hope you'll admire that segue. Ryan Porteous has recently been announced by Hibs will not be signing a new contract. And at the moment, there are a host of English Championship clubs. I think Stoke and Sheffield United are the two mentioned, along with both Celtic and Rangers, as likely destinations. Tony, I don't think this... I don't mean the clubs. I mean his not signing a new contract. Is not really a surprise to the Hibs support, is it? Because this has been going on so long that you just knew it was going to end in tears.
In this exact fact. But as I've always said, Ryan Porteous is a thug, and he's rubbish.
He's no good.
he's never been good. Never said that in my long times watching him.
You'll be Queen of the South in a couple of years. That's what you've always thought.
Yeah, always, always. You'd be reeks of Palmerston Park. But Ryan Porteous, I think the only way that we maybe would have got that extra year out of him, or maybe him signing a year or 2 year deal, was if Hibs were performing really well and he would maybe want to see through the season, because Hibs are challenging for third and maybe cups and maybe European football, so there'd be something for him to go. But with that not happening, why would he just keep stalling his career to be in mid-table or relegation fights at a club he's been at for a long time? Whether he's a
do you even think that if Hibs were challenging for third this season, they would stick about? I don't.
I think Hibs, if Hibs were challenging for third, I don't think Hibs would have sold, would be selling him in January. I think they would have kept him on to try and achieve what they would. So I think Porteous would be, if Hibs were doing well, I think Porteous would be seen out this season. But the fact that he has announced, the fact that the club's come out and announced that he's not signing a new deal, is by all intents and purposes putting him on the transfer list. It's only done for one reason, to alert clubs to come and get him and to start making offers. Lee Johnson says he will be used, which is fair enough. Going into it, Ryan Porteous doesn't strike me as the kind of player that would down tools at all at Hibs. He plays too much with his heart on his sleeve, so I don't have any problem in term with him doing that. I just thought that, I had a feeling that Hibs were just going to park him and then go for it. But the way Lee Johnson's speaking is that he will be playing until he leaves. But I would heavily presume at best his last game in a Hibs jersey will probably be Tynecastle, be my guess. And fingers crossed he does something mental just for memories for everyone to remember him by.
Unless he's going to get played on the wing as Boyle's replacement. But.
Yeah. Well, that's another reason why I think Hibs are looking to sell him as well. Like they need to drum up some cash because of what's happened to Martin Boyle, and they need to maybe, there's holes in the squad and he's a sellable asset that's going to be leaving anyway. So they're probably thinking we need to just go ahead and do that. But sorry, Sean, on you go.
So I suppose there's a couple of questions. So before you made that point, I was going to say, who do you blame for this? And if blame can be attached anywhere. But then I suppose the second point, based on what you just mentioned, is like you're saying, they could cash in, but they're not going to be able to cash in to any degree whatsoever, the fact that they've announced his availability.
Yeah.
What are they going to get for him? 150 grand, if that?
I think they would get more than that for Ryan Porteous, just based on the Scotland performance.
Is there any blame attached anywhere in terms of the fact that Porteous is either going to leave for very little money or no money? And B, do you honestly think that Hibs will be able to attract a big enough transfer deal that would entice them to sell in January? Because obviously there is a big difference in terms of where you finish in the Premiership. So I'm not entirely sure it's necessarily value for money letting them go in January.
Well, I think the club must be, I would imagine, if they've announced it, I'm imagining they've been alerted to there being quite a lot of competition for his signature. That would be my guess. I'm not saying that's true. That would maybe be their perception. So they maybe think that they could get, not a bidding war, but clubs would maybe want to get ahead of the game to try and get him in and get it done in January. So they might be able to still be able to make, I don't know, 300,000-400,000 out of Ryan Porteous. Which would be a decent amount of money for Hibs to try and obviously to negate the issues of the Boyle's injury and the fact Hibs have holes in their squad. And like you say, that Porteous is going to be no doubt leaving at the end of the season. That would be my instinct with this. But I agree with you. But again, it's just all about how many clubs are interested and do they want to get ahead of the game? Is there foreign clubs that would be interested? I'd love to see them go abroad. I think it would be absolutely great for them to go and do it. Not that you were asking that question, I'm just now musing about Ryan Porteous, but yeah, I do think there could be enough to make it worth Hibs' while. I do think he's got enough there, and that performance in a Scotland jersey is a big reason for that. And if there's already a few clubs interested, they could maybe get between 300 and 500,000. I do think they could get that.
What about if he was to go down south? Like, do you think Heckenbottom is a big enough fan for him to go to something like Sheffield United? Which might mean that he is in the Premiership next season.
Yeah, I mean, then that would be fucking great. I think that would be just the most box office thing. Going Ryan Porteous instantly parachuted into the English Premiership. So I don't know. I mean, Heckenbottom's time at Hibs was a time that I didn't live in Scotland, so I can never. You lose that ability to gauge how everyone's thinking and how everyone's feeling when you're watching it from afar. But I've always felt the case that every manager's really, really rated Porteous, and you can tell that by even when he makes the mistakes, even when there's disciplinary issues, it's always swept away because people have so much faith in his ability and sort of all the attributes that he has, because he does. He's got absolutely everything in his locker. I'll use an example. Scott McKenna, from what he's achieving now compared to what Porteous has loads more to his game than Scott McKenna did at the time that he was leaving Aberdeen. And his career's went zoomed right up, and he's had some great performances at that level. So I think that might help as well in terms of getting people to have faith in him, because they've seen what other players can do that have come up from a similar position with a similar background. So I could see, I think Ryan Porteous could easily still go down there and be quite a big success, yeah, and clubs will be interested in him.
And that would obviously help Ryan Porteous keep his place in the Scotland squad. Gee, Scotland squads. What feature do we often do with Scotland squads? That's right, we do the top 50 memorable Scotland games, and yes, dear listener, it is somehow still going, but don't worry, we're near the end. We're at number
Thank
two.
Thank God.
And it is one that, unless you're a very precocious child, you should remember. It is June the 10th, 2017, and it was also nearly for Scotland, but they had to put a former Dundee United man in the squad to ruin it for all of us. Scotland 2, England 2. So obviously this was the game with Lee Griffiths' identical free kicks, which Joe Hart didn't learn the lesson from the first time round. I'm guessing, Sean, at least you would have been at the game.
We've not done the music or the films, and that's something. Come on,
Tony, have you done it?
Of course, I have.
I can tell you that Chris Cornell died the previous month, but that was his father.
That's the one I like.
if Sean can set the scene for us a little bit more, I will make sure that I am able to tell you which.
I think Tony's got them.
Tony's got them.
After you, Tony.
I think the number one movie by one day, next day it changes. By this point, it was the remake of Baywatch.
Awful.
With Dwayne Johnson. Let me see. Wonder Woman replaced it.
Better.
Was it also rubbish? I don't watch those types of films.
No, the first Wonder Woman film was okay. The second Wonder Woman film, Wonder Woman 1984, less impressive.
Okay. I was going to watch it once on a boat in New Zealand from the South Island to North Island. It was on then because I was living there and I was on a boat over, but they just crammed us on and there was like a storm and I was on a couch. I was about to go in and I literally got flown to the other side of the boat and there was water coming up above the windows that you could see at the side. So, and I was hungover as fuck. So like the last thing I was like sharing, it was probably one of the scariest experiences of my life. But everyone else thought it was just absolutely fine. So I never bothered with Wonder Woman that time, and that scarred me. So I'm never going to do it again. The number one song.
I wouldn't pay much attention to any film if I thought I was on the road. Exactly. It was away up the road.
Exactly. I thought there's no point in me going into that small theatre to watch Wonder Woman. I'm going to concentrate. I was even with Mandy. I was like, I'll just spend time with these workmates that I've got.
it's not even like a short film. Like, if you think, like, this boat only has 2 hours afloat left, and Wonder Woman lasts an hour and a half, then fair enough. But no, it's a reasonably long film.
And the song is one that I think everyone will be aware of. Daddy Yankee with Justin Bieber. Despacito.
Oh, God, that was everywhere.
Yeah. That was a real earworm and bad one at that. But yeah, that was, and I noticed it was in the UK, the US, and on the Billboard charts in other countries. It was number one absolutely everywhere. Did you like that song, Sean?
Do you know something? I only listen to my own Spotify, so probably haven't listened to a new song in about 7 years.
Well, right, so I just missed off the cut because it was 5 years ago. You tell me you've not heard Despacito. You must have heard.
That's a real treat for the listeners to get to see those talent competitions.
I should have done Justin Bieber at high school.
Maybe twice. Maybe I heard it twice.
Fair enough. Back to the football, eh? Nobody wants to talk about Justin Bieber.
Yeah, well, we can speak about the first 90 plus 3 minutes of the game, certainly, at least, and then just absolutely tear Stuart Armstrong a new one for the rest of it. It's probably fair to say that the opening hour, at least, of the game was pretty unremarkable, Sean. Everything was just packed into those final... I don't think it was even the final half an hour. It was a little bit less than that.
It was both one of the dullest Scotland-England games of all time and somehow one of the most exciting. So I watched back the highlights earlier. There's not a lot of highlights in the first half. I mean, I would go as far as to say I was pretty bored for about the first hour. I mean, England were on top. They had a couple of half chances in the first half. They hit the post in the second half. There was a massive stramash that they probably should have done better with in the second half. I mean, England were on top, but ultimately it was a kind of attritional battle that Scotland were doing okay from a defensive point of view in terms of they were keeping England at arm's length, but in terms of being able to kind of get at England and create their own chances, other than an Andy Robertson, a half-decent Andy Robertson chance in the first half, who had done that thing and it was like, right, hit it. But then he takes an extra chance, which then somehow makes him unbalanced and then that flies off target. It's infuriating. He does it quite a bit. I mean, that was as good as it got. And then as soon as they went a goal down, you think, well, that's it. And it wasn't. I mean, I actually thought that Craig Gordon was at fault for both goals. It was one of those ones. You know how Gordon has this thing where every now and again he will make himself smaller. The shot was essentially right at him, but he makes himself, he kind of crouches and then it goes through him, and you think at that point, right, well, you know something, that'll be that then.
Very unedifying in public for Scotland to be conceding goals to Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as well.
Aye, and do you know something? That's the thing. I was looking through this England team. Wasn't it a great England team?
Sure not. It's definitely like you can see that it's going to be a changeover, basically, at that point. I mean, it goes into the World Cup in Russia, which they do pretty well in. I mean, they get the jammy draw, of course, which has been sort of the whole point in their uprising in the last couple of tournaments, like pure luck of draw. But in this one, it's like there's just such a changeover. You know that Adam Lallana is going to be finished soon. Livermore in central midfield. That blew my socks off.
I think it was him that hit the post. Rubbish.
He did that. Well, I took a deflection of the post. I've got some interest in Jake Livermore stuff for later, but you can carry on, Sean.
Who was the centre-half that played for him that used to play for Maidstone that wasn't very good?
It's Chris Smalling.
Yes. I mean, as much as people say, oh my goodness, a fantastic story to go from Maidstone to England. But the thing is, ultimately, the longer he played at the top end, the more people realised how he managed to play for Maidstone.
Also, he is now at Roma.
And he's doing very well, apparently.
Apparently. Well, that shows you what I know.
Yes, he plays every week under Jose Mourinho now. Won the good old Conference League last season, but he didn't make the England squad again here. And it's not like they've got a rich tapestry of centre halves, do they?
And to set the scene a little bit more, obviously this was part of the qualifying group for World Cup 2018. It's probably fair to say that Scotland were in a little bit of a three-way tussle with Slovakia and Slovenia, and it looked a little bit loss before this game. I think Scotland fans were probably looking at this game and hoping to get something from it, but realistically looking at it and thinking that only a win would really give Scotland the boost it would need to go there. And obviously we actually came incredibly heartbreakingly close to it.
I mean, I've spoke previously about the, I think it was the Euro 2016 campaign that was so frustrating, in that at the halfway point we went to Ireland and then seemed to just kind of panic a wee bit and then kind of go on the back foot and then we never really recovered. There seemed to be a hangover going into this campaign from 2016 to 2018, because we never started this campaign at all. And so we ended up being equal on points with Slovakia. So Slovakia finished second. Mm. We were third on goal difference. However, there was essentially three games that kind of done us. So we drew at home with Lithuania, which might have been our second or third game, which I was
second
at.
Second game after furious. Malta.
Absolutely furious. James MacArthur scored about 89th minute. Furious. Yep. We contrived to throw this away in the 93rd minute. But then still, despite all of that, we actually done reasonably well against everybody else. And going into the last game, we still had a chance away to Slovenia. But then if we'd won that, we would have ended up finishing second. We would have gone into the playoffs. However, what I would say is the playoffs were seeded and we would have ended up against somebody. So the four seeded teams were Switzerland, Italy, Croatia, and
Denmark.
And Denmark, which, I don't get me wrong, we would have given ourselves a shot. Did I fancy us to beat any of them? No. But regardless, it was frustrating. And although people say, well, this was the game that cost us, I mean, Lithuania at home cost us as much, Slovenia's way cost us as much, but yeah. this felt worse because of the nature of the game. Like, you go 2-1 up against England in the 90th minute, my goodness, just fucking hold on.
With two free kicks, you mean the amount of work that's to, you've, it's like an unheard of way of getting ahead, really, as well. It's very rare that someone just bangs in two free kicks. So you've already got sort of like this huge, unique moment that's going to give you the 3 points, and for you to chuck it away is just, well, it's absolutely criminal. And I mean, with Stuart Armstrong, now that you think about it, that pass that he made again for Shea Adams against Denmark, I'm surprised he never got PTSD and just sort of smashed out the stadium rather than trying to make the pass.
But just go left. Like, see when he's in position, go left. Like, I think we have like a 3-on-1. Go left. But he decides to go right, and then, like, he doesn't get enough on it or whatever he does. Fucking go left. Like, when we literally had like a 3-on-1, or do whatever you want, but don't fucking do that.
Yes. I mean, Sean, I was playing 5-a-side last night. We were 1-up with 1 minute to go, and I smashed the ball into the ceiling. And that's a game of fives at the local school. If Stuart Armstrong is guarding,
so no, Gary had no idea about the stage of the game or anything. He just smashed his ball into the ceiling. Yes.
Yeah. I think that's a terrible comparison, Gary. Like, I think the way Stuart Armstrong's footballing mind works, he does think to himself, I probably have some options here. What will I do? Or will I just blutter it into the sky?
Well, it would have worked a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. But basically, in that moment, if Gary was on the pitch as Stuart Armstrong, we'd be talking about a famous victory. And it's as simple as
if
that.
If Gary were on the park, we'd have lost 15-2.
I like how you still think we get those free kicks. That one where he fucking slips and falls and just gives us a free kick. That would still have happened.
It is.
That still would have happened if Gary was playing.
Chris Smalling still would have panicked in the 90th minute. even though they were winning 14-1.
Just sheer chaos factor. What are they doing bringing this guy on?
That's your Gary who brings in the 2-3 kicks.
What I would say, so genuinely, it is my favourite moment in terms of being at a game ever. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced anything like it. The Caldwell's goal against France came close. The celebrations at full time came close. But in terms of literally just losing your head and literally, I was quite near the front. I was to the right of Lee Griffiths when he was lining up the kind of free kick. I was about 3 or 4 seats to the end of the row. We'd went Doolally when he'd equalised. When he placed the ball, or when we got the second free kick, there was a genuine belief, he's going to score this. Now, this is just because we're on a high. I get that. We're hyper on a high. And then when he does it again, loads of people just started sprinting down the stairs, and I was like, no, I think I'm a reasonably rational person who knows the difference between right and wrong. But I decided I am going to sprint down these stairs as well, because these people must be sprinting to a place that is much better. So I followed them, and I don't know how to explain it. It looks like an area where... So there was nobody in this area, but basically like at Hampden, there's a kind of black fence that kind of juts out. I don't know if it's maybe like a position for maybe like wheelchairs, for example, but there was nobody
there.
Where is
this going?
It was an empty area that kind of jutted out. So it got filled with about 100 Scotland fans, and we were just kind of gesticulating towards the England fans. But bear in mind, wasn't it a million miles away from when Hibs fans ran in the park for the cup final? Yeah. So a load of police ran over, and I remember a load of them kind of got their truncheons out, and they were screaming at us to go and sit down, but they looked terrified, and I don't know if they thought we were going to run in the park. I don't know what they thought was going to happen, but there is I've got this picture somewhere on Twitter, and Lee Griffiths is running away, so he's ran behind the goals, and he's ran towards the fans to celebrate, and somebody has taken a picture from quite high in the stand that he's running towards, and you could see in the distance, literally the kind of opposite area of Hampden, there is a kind of cordon of yellow jackets, and it's the police who seem to be entirely worried about the fact that there's about 100 Scotland fans, just doing an impromptu mosh pit in this kind of barren area of Hampden. But I can honestly say I've never experienced a celebration like it. I have never celebrated anything like it. And there's if you listen to, I think it's Sky's commentary.
Yeah, I watched that, yeah.
Certainly kind of Gary Neville and I forget the main guy, but they're
Martin
saying...
Martin Tyler, is it not?
Yes, you're right, it's Martin Tyler. They've never experienced anything like it, and... They're right. It's incredible.
It seems that when the camera pans out and Guy Neville says, "I've not seen a celebration like this in a football stadium for a long, long time," it is absolute chaos. There is bodies. I suppose I'm told to, I'll be forced to use the term limbs now, but they are going everywhere, and it does look like so spectacular. This is the thing that you don't get in any other sport. And this is the magical thing, is that moment where you will never see in any other sport people behaving like that in a stand. Like a stand that looks like that. You just don't see it anywhere else. And it's fucking, it looks magical.
Yeah.
I screamed and screamed and screamed.
I punched the air.
And then I realised that I'm miles away from my seat and my pals. So I go back to my seat and then I realised I can't even breathe. And yes, it was 2-2. It was an extraordinary, extraordinary moment. And I know the SFA done the video where it was like send us videos of you celebrating Lee Griffiths' second goal. And I know, after the event, it kind of felt a bit, what's the point? We never got the win. But do you know something? After the event, it's like, right, okay, so the kind of 2-2 is the main thing. However, as a moment, That was fucking brilliant. So I can understand why they had the videos about how, what a kind of special moment in time that was, because it was, honestly, it was fucking brilliant.
And it is probably also the high point in Lee Griffith's career as well. And I think that even, notwithstanding Lee Griffiths being Lee Griffiths, I think if you've been told in just over 5 years' time he'll be going from this moment to playing a couple of games for an Australian, the equivalent of an Australian junior side, and training with, I forget if it's Livy or it's Morton. I think he's training with Livy.
He's strongly linked to Morton just now.
Yeah. It's just an incredible, or incredibly rapid decline. I know that
the decline seemed to happen from this, almost. Like, it was like he hit this peak and it's almost like he trampolined off it. Down the way.
Yeah.
It like almost seemed to be like instantly from this moment. He sort of lost his place, lost his way, and both on the pitch and off the pitch. And it's, there's probably never been a more rapid decline of a player.
If you can think of a more rapid decline, listeners,
I would have to go back and look at his career goals, because somebody put them up recently and it's been a long time since he had an actual season where he had decent figures. Now, it might have been, don't get me wrong, it might have been that one. Maybe he was having a good season club-wise, but you're going back a good 5 or 6, maybe 7 years.
Celtic, when he scored 31 season around this time, and that would be it. And then obviously Hibs. He scored a barrel load in the in the league, and I think he was maybe top goal scorer in the league along with Louis Moat, possibly. But yeah, the decline was frightening. It's the curse of being a Hibs striker. Eh? All their careers seem to end at around 28, 29. O'Connor, Riordan, Lee Griffiths. Lee Griffiths actually lasted long. Go by that curse. Lee Griffiths done really well for himself.
So Hibs years are like dog years then, when it comes to strikers, pretty much.
And certainly for what, and certainly for fans as well. I'll be dead by the time I'm 42.
Well, before you corpse us, Tony.
Before you leave us.
Before you shuffle off this mortal coil, it wouldn't be a Scotland game without you taking us into Scandal Corner. I do ask you to bear in mind that I think everybody in this game is alive and very wealthy. So just... Yeah.
They won't care.
Flavor.
They won't listen. We've done some of them before, like Kyle Walker. We managed to do that one about him just getting the prostitutes over during lockdown, which is an absolute beauty. I don't think I need to say allegedly. I think he got fined for it. I'm sure he did. But we'll not go back at that one. I don't want to cover all bloody ground. But the best one that I was finding was, there's a mix of sadness in this one. It was Jake Livermore, as I said, he really stood out as a player just when I looked at the team and where was that. And he went through so much in such a short period. I mean, he lost his son, and then he never really played for a year. And then he failed a drugs test for cocaine, but due to the circumstances of how it had happened, they actually let him off. With the positive test, and he wasn't given a banning order because it was a year after his son had died, and I think he went through a lot of turmoil, as you would. But then there was an added part to this that I was blown away by, is just Jake Livermore says fraudster convicted over 45 million VAT scam saved him following the death of his son. So this is him going into a courtroom and sort of defending and doing a character witness positively on a fraudster who sort of frauded 45 million for the government because he looked out for him and helped him after his son died. So he was talking positively about it. The guy still went down and it was definitely him. But I just like where that just where it grew arms and legs from it. So he wrote to the judge to praise Joshua Cope, who he said helped him when his child died the day after he played for Hull in the 2014 FA Cup final. He helped him set up a charity in his son's name and supported him with frequent phone calls as he struggled to cope with his grief. And then it started, you start, the always running through my head is like, maybe this guy had really nefarious reasons for helping you to create a charity, but that's not for me to say, of course. And he protected him And then he done that, and so I found that just quite that story from his son dying, which is so sad, and where that grew into, caught me off guard when I started typing my usual player name scandal after, which is what I do to prepare for these parts of every single time.
I presume you're going to talk about Lee Griffiths and an energy drink.
I mean, we had that. That was sort of like right when I started doing the podcast, which is similarly around the time we started doing these top 50s. it must have been, God, I'm so old now. It's mental. I think that I started doing this pod and I met Joel maybe about 12 years ago now, 10, 12 years ago. We started doing this when I first started doing it with Joel and Fowler. But yeah, a friend of mine phoned me from Tesco Christopher to tell me that Lee Griffiths had been huckled for stealing the Lucozade off the shelves for no reason apart from that he wanted to, obviously. And I told Fowler, and then he was able to use that as a tweet, and maybe I'll start telling Fowler that I'm the reason that he's, without that, he would never have grown. You would never have got a TV show if it wasn't for Lee Griffiths.
With tiny acorns.
the tiny flap of Lee Griffiths' butterfly wings.
Lee Griffiths, to think that stealing the Lucozade is, and now just seems like a warm, cuddly thing compared to what Lee Griffiths has done. Since, even though Lee Griffiths is such a strange character, I mean, some the positive stuff, he sorted out these young Hearts fans Christmas, bought them all PlayStations and stuff because they got all their stuff stolen, and he stepped in, he just saw it online, and he bought all these young Hearts fans gifts, so a really complex guy by all accounts, and hopefully he'll stop being weird and recover.
And so do all of us.
Season's greetings. Merry Christmas to everyone. I don't know. Good luck, Lee Griffiths. Please recover.
Yeah, and who knows, maybe he'll be putting in one of those free kicks for Greenock Morton against his former employers in the Scottish Cup, just to bring things back around to where
It's so funny if he gets signed again, because it's always, obviously the temptation is, if we could just get him fit, but the size he was playing for Hibs in the Sozzy game that Sozzy never turned up for, the sort of charity match that he was just playing in there, it's going to take at least 3 months to get him anywhere near fit, and then the season's over. So I just... stop the dreaming, Greenock Morton. please learn from others' mistakes.
I don't think Greenock Morton are dreaming. I think Lee Griffiths might be dreaming.
Yeah. But good luck to him, and thanks for those goals. They were a good laugh, and they gave Sean his favourite moment in football history.
Oh, honestly, brilliant. Thank you, Lee.
I bet you never thought you'd say that. And thank you as well, dear listeners, for I see what you did there, Tony. Thank you, dear listener, for sticking with us through this hour, and you'll be very pleased to know that the next time we do one of these Scotland games, it will be the final one. And then, just like painting the fourth rail bridge, we'll have to start all over again. Because there's been about 312 Scotland games since we actually compiled this list.
That'll be like, you know, like we go for hospitality once a year to get everyone together and all that. I think I might need to take time off work when this is finally over and we all get together and have a big party that this top 50 is finally done.
Unless we find some sort of mistake and realise we've only done 47. Just be absolutely furious.
See, even if we discover that mistake, let's just ignore it.
Nobody else fucking cares, so I can tell you that for free.
The listeners don't even know we skipped over 23.
Yeah, every time it comes off after the next 45th, they're like, fuck this. Plus 50 seconds, about 20 times on their Spotify.
As soon as they mention the top 50 list, they're going, fuck off, listening. Listen to Broomhill.
There'll be some freak who Spotify rapped as the Scottish memorable 50 games.
Yeah.
1 million minutes spent listening to the top 50 Scotland games. Right.
Oh, dear. Right. Let's leave it there, folks. So, thanks for listening. If you do happen to support a team like me or Sean that is too shit to be in the Premiership, enjoy your football this weekend. If not, Enjoy the World Cup while it lasts, and we will all speak to you very soon. Bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.